Well, welcome to the Path Forward, the maiden voyage of this show. And I've asked Michael Yon to jump on and give us an update on what's going on in Panama and talk through the threat that's posed by the NGOs in the Panama Canal, the cartels, et cetera. So, Michael, thanks for being here. I know you're pressed for time, so I appreciate you jumping on and doing this show ad hoc. Not that you're busy at all.
Thanks for having me on. I've been gone for, I don't know, maybe a year, and I'm back in Texas now, actually. And so I just got back from Panama. This last trip to Panama was about 5 months. And before that, a couple months in Argentina looking at that. And before that, it was Japan and Taiwan and Thailand and Singapore looking at all the same issues, actually. And so actually about 30 countries in the last 4 years looking at these same issues, which is partly about the invasions, systematic invasions around the world of so many countries, whether that be Canada or across Europe, Australia, of course, and actually Japan. A lot of people don't realize Japan is suffering similarly to others, and because the Japanese are allowing it, just like all these other countries are. There's actually a town in Japan called Kawaguchi that the Japanese are now calling Kawaguchistan because it's so filled with Kurds. Yeah.
Isn't that true? Well, let's start with Panama. What's the, you and I had a conversation that's been ongoing for a couple of weeks now. And the thing that I want you to talk through is, what's the status with the NGOs that were helping the invasion? What's going on in Darien Gap? What's the flow look like? Are the camps still there? Let's start there, because I'm going to focus the conversation on where the threat is actually emerging.
Yep. As of last week, all the camps are completely intact. The flow is down to almost zero. The flow from Colombia into Panama through the Darien Gap is almost zero, maybe 3 or 5 people a day, something like that. Down from, 2,000 a day or even more. There was times when it was more than 5,000. 89,000 in 1 month as an example. So the flow is down to a trickle, but all the architecture is there. So basically the spigot is cut off, but nobody has dismantled the camps in Colombia. They're fully manned. Just had somebody down in Colombia looking at it. I was just down the Darien, and since I've left Darien, I have other people look at it constantly. The camps are fully intact. The United Nations is fully operational in Panama City at their headquarters at Ciudad del Saber, which is a city of knowledge. It's old former Fort Clayton, right next to the Panama Canal, right next to Miraflores Locks, right? And so they are still completely operational all around the world. They're still invading Europe, as an example, and still invading Canada. So it's not like everything is stopped. It's just, and keep in mind, I've said this to you before, many people over the last 4 years have said it's impossible to close the Darien Gap. And those people I immediately realized I can't listen to, because they didn't pass a basic test. The Darien Gap was closed before. During the pandemic, it was squeaky closed. If I were to design a military obstacle to help me close the Darien Gap, it would be the Darien Gap. I mean, the Darien Gap is intense, and it's very difficult to cross. And if you then don't actually facilitate people coming through, which is what's happening with the United Nations and HIAS and others, then it would be very difficult. And actually, what's actually happening is U.S. money and money from HIAS and others, Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, are actually putting people on buses and busing them up to Costa Rica. Then they end up crossing Nicaragua. And before you know it, they're all over the United States. And so at the end of the day, all those architectures are in place. And again, if I had a table full of generals and we were discussing and closing the Darien Gap, and if one said it's impossible to close the Darien Gap, I would say you're dismissed. And that's it, because I know it can be closed. I've been down there so much. I spent months down there. So it's easy to close. It's closed now, but it's easy to turn back on. All you have to do is turn your back on it and it'll turn back on. It's like a spigot that'll turn itself on if you don't lock it, right?
What about the Chinese bridge that was being built? Is that still in process?
Oh yeah, I go there all the time. I mean, I'm there constantly. The other, let's see, when did that Spain Portugal power outage happen? I was actually there
a week ago.
I was there watching for a couple of hours. I was watching him work on the bridge. It's right beside where Hegseth spoke, the Secretary of Defense. right beside that. In fact, in the background, he would be able to hear them, the Chinese working on their bridge, right? So there's three bridges over the Panama Canal now. That would be the fourth bridge. The Panamanians call it China Bridge, right? And so China Bridge will actually land on one side, on the Panama City side, at the Hutchison, at one of the Hutchison ports that China operates. So that will go, that road on that new bridge, or even the existing bridge beside it, Thatcher Ferry Bridge, is Highway 1, right? And so that goes all the way down to Darien. They're opening the Darien Gap now. They're building two bridges in Darien as well. Now, let me get to this. This is important. So I was standing there in a park, which is a Chinese memorial park, overlooking the canal, ships coming through and going out. Right beside me, I can hear the Chinese working on the fourth bridge, right? So this is how close it is. Across the water from the Panama Canal, which is not very far, you could swim it, is the Thatcher, is the Hutchison port that China's operating on the Pacific side. So we got China building a bridge. I'm standing in a Chinese park, and across the water is Hutchison port operated by China. And then, as if on a movie set, I'm getting messages come through, like from Blaine Holt sent a message. You know, he said, hey, the power outage, there's just power just went out in Spain and Portugal, right? And I'm like, And then my box starts to flood. I'm watching all this happen. I'm getting messages, the power's out in Spain and Portugal. And then a ship, as if on cue, comes under the Thatcher Ferry Bridge, crosses it, you know, as they're working on the China Bridge, and it's got windmill blades on it. So I look up, you know, where's this ship from? Because you can see the name of the ship. It just came from China, and it's on the way to Galveston, Texas. So I'm literally standing there in a Chinese park watching the Chinese bridge be built, which is a debt trap, watching the Hutchison port operating on the other side of the canal, and a ship comes through from China to Texas with windmill blades while the power's out in Spain and Portugal. You just can't make up this stuff. That's like out of a fiction book.
Oh, absolutely. So let me encapsulate what I'm hearing you say. So you're saying that, number one, all the NGOs that helped move this massive invasion are still in place, and there's been no movement to dislodge them, to shut them down, or to retake any of the real estate in Panama by the U.S. government. Number two, the Chinese are still actively building four bridges into Panama through the Darien Gap.
Building the fourth bridge there. And then there's two more bridges down in Darien, who nobody will say who's funding those.
You know, it's China. But
yeah, for sure. They'll probably use somebody else to fund it, but it'll be China behind it. Right.
Right. Okay. So I think we got a pretty good picture of just how involved China is. My question to you is, what's, now that you're in the, now let's transition up to Texas, because I'm going to get to the threat in a second. You're in Texas. You're going to go to the border. You're going to see what the border looks like. And I think you're still hanging out with Pete Chambers, right? I mean,
yeah. I saw him this morning, actually.
I think between the two of you guys have done more to defend the border than the United States military in total in the last 4 years. So I'm glad to see you guys are actually together going down to the border, because I think he knows more about it than anybody in the government. That's for sure.
I would say that I have physically seen with my eyes the U.S. military helping people across the border. So, I mean, that's just straight up. That's a done deal. It's, yeah. You know, and Doc Chambers and I and many others, and long list. I mean, it's a long list of patriots who have been working hard to close the border. Let me say one thing. I woke up this morning. I went for a walk. The first human I saw was smoking dope here in Texas, right? The very first human I saw. And he's like, good morning. I'm like, okay, here we go. You know what I mean? The intoxicants, whether it's alcohol or any form of dope, that's the primary weapon in psychological warfare. And they're hitting us hard with that. Every time I come back to the United States, I smell dope, 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 dope everywhere. They've doped us down. Keep in mind, I spend most of my time downrange. So when I come back to the U.S., it's quite, it like jumps off the page to me.
Yeah. So that's a good segue. So let's talk about the U.S. border. What do you, have you been down there yet, or you're going down there today? I think it's, you're going down today, right?
We were going to go down today. We had to cancel. And so we're not going down today. Actually, I'm going to be with Todd Bensman on Monday and Tuesday doing related stuff. We're looking as well.
Okay. So let's just talk threat now. So the two things we haven't talked, which you, it's a good segue, is the drug problem, right? Because it's not just dope, it's fentanyl, the fentanyl labs, and the cartels. So I'm curious what your view of the cartels are and how big of a threat they are given the current situation and what you're seeing from Panama. Where do you see the cartels now?
Oh, the cartels, like the United Nations. Yeah, I mean, and HIAS and Red Cross and Norwegian Refugee Councils, Catholic Charities, those cartels are intense. And those are the biggest cartels, are our biggest problems. And then there's the Mexicans and that sort of thing as well, and the Colombians and the various other cartels. But the biggest cartels and the hugest danger to the United States is United Nations. It would be United Nations and Chinese Communist Party. And actually, this may sound strange, but I'm not sure who's most dangerous to the United States, Chinese Communist Party or United Nations. And I have reasons for saying that. Now, the Chinese Communist Party is obviously incredibly dangerous to the United States, and they're making a lot of progress, but they're like the left hand, right hand of this fight. United Nations has been deeply involved, for instance, in taking away the Panama Canal from the United States using information war and handing it to the Panamanians, quote unquote. But China
at the behest of China, I think China is working through the UN at the behest of China. They handed over the sovereignty of the Panama Canal. So I think
they don't hide it. China brags about using the United Nations to do that. And they're doing right now, they're doing the same with Diego Garcia in the Indian Ocean. China is using the United Nations, trying to hand it over to Mauritius. Diego Garcia is a strategic base, obviously, that China would love to have. And we have, you know, bombers there now. But the United Nations would like to take Diego Garcia, give it to Mauritius, and then China can take it from Mauritius
and build another aircraft carrier.
Obvious game. Yeah.
And so that said, where do you see, so, and I want to go back. So we did a sit rep several months ago now where we talked about basically a war with the cartels. Do you still think that's in the cards, or do you think that threat has been, I don't want to say neutralized because that's not the right word I'm looking for, more along the lines of delayed? Or how do you see that developing?
Well, on the United Nations cartels, unless we defund and defang and dismantle them, all the rest of the cartels will remain well-funded. I mean, keep in mind, United Nations, I hear a lot of people are always like, oh, it's the Mexican cartels that are causing the invasions. That's absolute nonsense. They're just the last part of the chain. The organizations like HIAS, Hebrew Immigrant Aid, by the way, Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, Todd Bensman, my friend, he wrote several articles about a guy from Mauritania, Africa, who came in and shot up and was trying to murder Jews, yelling Allahu Akbar. He shot a Jewish guy. Luckily, he's recovered. And so that guy went to jail. What was his name? Abdullah or something like that. Anyway, that guy came through the Darien Gap on January 2nd, 2023. I know that because I looked it up about 48 hours ago when I saw what Todd had written. So there's his name. He came through. He came across the Texas border in, I think, March of 2023. Then he did his crime, and now he mysteriously died in jail. So the Jewish guy recovered. But I've been warning for years now that Jewish money through HIAS, Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, is helping these people come through who are going to end up murdering Jewish people on golf courses in West Palm Beach, Florida. And it will have been Jewish money. Like, all you look on HIAS.org, HAIS.org, Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, HIAS. Look on their website at their donors list. You'll see so many Shapiros and whatnot. There's a mysterious Ben Shapiro on there. I'm not sure exactly who he is. But so there are, these donors are helping these, that guy who shot the Jewish guy, HIAS 100% helped him get through the Darien Gap. HIAS Jewish donors helped a jihadist try to murder Jews in America. And I keep saying this, and they'll say, oh, you're anti-Semite. I'm the one that's protecting Jews, right? And the people at HIAS, the Jews at HIAS, who are putting all this money into bringing these people in, they're going to end up with dead Jews all over the place thanks to HIAS. And they're still operating. HIAS's office is open in the Darien right now. In fact, it's right off of Highway 1. You go down to this hotel called Tenose, take a left, go down about 100 yards. It's on your right. It's right right next to San Vicente Migrant Camp. HIAS is the largest member of, let's say, of the NGOs who runs San Vicente Camp. Hias helps people with helps the migrants get maps and all sorts of other help. They help them get from Africa into South America, up through Colombia, in through, and they help them. And then they've got then they've got little offices around the United States. Hias is actually helping Jew killers get next to Jews in America. Nobody can make up this stuff. This is like right out of some science fiction novel.
Well, I think there's multiple lines of operation that they're pursuing, right? So there's the anti-Semitic piece, which, let's face it, Israel's doing a very good job of that just with their activities in Gaza and in Lebanon, not to mention the bombings across the Middle East that are being attributed to them. So there's definitely an information war going on to foment some kind of anti-Semitic.
Yeah, you know, but we're way beyond the part where that magic wand goes, oh, you're anti-Semite.
Right.
We're like, this is the anti-Semitic magic wand in the fireplace. It no longer works. The moment you do the magic wand with you're an anti-Semite, I'm like, out. It doesn't work anymore. It's backfiring. We're sick of it. It's over. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. We're seeing what we're seeing. And it's Jewish people that are helping us close this down, too. Because Jews are like Catholics, are like Christians. They have all these different groups inside, and some are against being invaded. A huge amount are against it. Some are for it. Many are anti-Zionist, which the Zionists, of course, try to spin everything as anti-Jew. But that's Zionism. They also fight each other and yada, yada, yada. Separate story. But that Hias Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, keep in mind, the guy that used to be a board member there, Alejandro Mayorkas, was a board member at Hias. Let me repeat that. The Department of Homeland Security chief, previous chief, was a board member at Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society because he's the child of Jewish Sephardic Jews who migrated to the United States. He then became a board member on Hias. He then moved over to the Department of Homeland Security. And you can see on the Hias.org website where they're congratulating him for his promotion to being basically chief invader of the United States, right?
So you just that's, can't make it up. You just can't make it up.
That's elephant tracks. That's elephant tracks, right? I mean, elephant tracks on the beach. Can we track this? Yes, I can track those elephants.
Okay, so let's switch gears now and let's look at Canada, because Canada is the other border that we share. And you've mentioned Canada several times. What do you see happening in Canada? I mean, aside from their communist country that's been taken over by a globalist, that's old news. What's the ground truth with immigration there? How many Chinese do you think are there? How many Chinese, you know, operations are going on there? There's a mountain of evidence that says there's full PLA battalions and brigades in Canada. Now, I don't know how much truth there is to that, but I'm hearing more and more that there's a significant Chinese presence in Canada as well.
I wouldn't doubt it at all. I mean, the PLA, the People's Liberation Army, has trained with the Canadian Army. And again, that's not conspiracy theory. That's a 100% fact. It's happened, right? In fact, I stayed with one of the Army officers, a Canadian Army officer, last year, I think, in Canada, and we talked about it extensively. One of his friends was one training with the Chinese in Canada. You can't make up how many Chinese are in Canada. I have no idea. I can tell you, I don't think the Chinese probably know, because keep in mind, China is like saying European, because there's many types of Chinese. There's the Hong Kongers, the Singaporeans, there's Chinese that have been there for 150 years who were really not a part of those groups. Some will be, some won't. And there's Cantonese speakers, Fujianese speakers, Mandarin speakers. That's like saying European. So, but the Chinese Communist Party. Now, we know about more than 25,000 Chinese came through just the Darien Gap just in 2023. About 550,000 people are on the records of coming through the Darien Gap in 20. I know, because I have the records, right? So about 1.4 million came through during the Biden time of people in general. And in 2023 alone, more than 25,000 of those were Chinese, right? And so keep in mind, that's just the Darien Gap flow. Many of the Chinese don't go through the Darien Gap. They start in Mexico. They start in Canada. They come in on student visas. They come in on work visas. They come through Bahamas. A huge amount come through Bahamas. A lot will go to like Cancun or Mexico City on vacation, and they bypass all that other stuff. They literally go on vacation in Cancun and do their vacation, and then they go up to Yuma or wherever and cross into the United States. I mean, I've met many of them crossing it. I've been across the entire U.S. southern border end to end, right? It took months took a long time. And I mean, a lot of that was on the Mexican side as well. And, you know, I'm familiar with that border. I've been up to the Canadian border, but that's 5,000 miles. I've only pinpricked that one, but that's the Canadian border can't, that is a huge vulnerability to the United States is Canada. Actually, our whole sea border is a vulnerability, especially as the Panama Canal is one of the most important places on earth for anybody, but especially for the United States. Of the seven major naval chokeholds, the Panama Canal is number one for the United States of primary importance. All of our seacoast obviously are borders, right? And our Navy needs to be, our military needs to get back and forth through that canal quickly. And China is slowly taking it, despite what we see with, you know, the director of CIA was down there about less than 2 weeks ago, by the way. I'm not sure that that was in the news, but he was down there. And then, of course, before that, Hegseth was there. He stayed in the same hotel I was staying in. And then before that was, of course, Rubio. So we had three heavy hitters and then a lot of others that aren't in the, I don't think the CIA director was even in the news at all, but he was there less than 2 weeks ago, right? So we're clearly lining up for do something in Panama. And all the players are at the table at this point, but you got to keep in mind, there's a lot more going on than just Panama, and Panama is absolutely vital.
I was going to go there next. So
yeah, like yeah. Colombia and Venezuela is very important. The Chevron thing and all these Guyana, of course, there's Cuba. There's so many aspects of this. You know, I had dinner the other night with Doc Chambers and some very interesting gentlemen. One's a retired military officer. And he asked, well, you know, what would you do to basically secure Panama? And I said, you know what, this is a comprehensive problem set. This isn't something that you can like explain in 15 minutes. You have to get a bunch of very serious people with different skill sets, and you need to get them at a resort or something for about a month together, so that everybody is there every day with all the maps on the walls and on the tables, and everybody's discussing this in private without anybody cameras around or anything like that, so that everybody can discuss this and think it through, because it's a comprehensive problem set and you need a lot of skill sets working together to figure out how, because the Chinese have been working on this for years. We basically vacated the Monroe Doctrine. It does not exist. Other than in the ether, it's a word people banter around. It's actually over. If you want to reestablish it, it will take a couple of generations. You're not going to reestablish it in the next 4 years. And China is truly colonizing, for instance, Panama. And when I say that, it drives Panamanians nutters. They're like, I grew up in Panama. You don't know what you're talking about. Yada yada yada. Whatever, man. And it's like, I am telling you. Chinese are colonizing Panama, period. I don't care if every Panamanian in Panama says otherwise, but many of them actually see it. But they are colonizing. They're moving in, especially around Panama City and Cherokee and different places like that. They're doing it subtly. This is what they did in Hong Kong when I was there in Hong Kong. Keep in mind, I've written three books on Chinese information war. I'm very familiar with this. I spent about a year running in and around China. I spent about almost 20 years in Asia, right? I'm very familiar with the problem set. I've been to places like Tibet where they did this. I was in Hong Kong. I got kicked out of Hong Kong. How did they do it in Hong Kong? They were just slowly pulling migrants from mainland China into Hong Kong. Those were Mandarin speakers from mainland China, and they were replacing the Cantonese-speaking Hong Kongers in teacher positions, professor positions at University of Hong Kong, all these different places, replacing them in police positions, politicians. They were replacing all these positions, setting conditions so that when the time came, they could take Hong Kong. And they did that in 2020 when they kicked me out. So they took Hong Kong and they're doing the same. They're slowly doing that in Canada. They're doing it in Panama. They're doing it in California. They're doing it in parts of the United States. They're doing it in many countries, Ecuador. They're doing it in many countries. It's not just a few.
Great. So one last, I know we're coming up on time, man, and time flies whenever I get online with you, man, time just blows by. One last question for you. What do you see is the most important next steps that the administration needs to take in the next, I'm going to say the next 12 months because I see a bunch of threats, and I'll talk about them once you depart. But suffice it to say, I'm curious what your thoughts on what's the most critical action the administration needs to take in the next 12 months.
Well, first, they'd need to clean out all the clowns that continue to be appointed, right? And so, I mean, this is serious business. We're going up against serious people, right? We're going up against China. They are playing for keeps. They're not chumps, right? You see what's happening now in Pakistan and India, obviously. I mean, there's no telling which way this goes. We continue to set conditions, for instance, for large-scale famines, which can happen across the world, which would not the entire world, of course, at once, but we can end up with famines, large famines in various parts of the world, which will drive a lot of hop, human osmotic pressure, that push and the pull of migration, people can flood into the United States in numbers like we've never seen before. And I think based on what I'm seeing now, that will come to pass at the current rate. That will come to pass. I mean, I communicate with people that are close to Trump on a regular basis. And I mean, really close. I mean, in his ear directly, right? I'm not seeing any moves to defund the United Nations. Zero, zero, right? I'm not seeing any moves to build defenses against any global famines that would cause an invasion of the United States. Right, which would be irreparable. The things that have already happened. So I'm in Central Texas right now. I'm near Austin. You hear out here around Dripping Springs, New Braunfels, Austin. People are getting their vehicles broken into all over the place. Homes now, people shot, killed, raped, murdered all the time. Right. So this is the border's been open. There's no mass deportations going on. Period. Full stop. They point to these numbers like 70,000. I'm like, get out of here. Get out of here with that 70,000 number. You should be doing that every 5 days, right? Seriously, how many days is it now? I mean, we're into 4 months almost now, right? Yep. And so we should have had, I don't know, 400,000 gone, no, 800,000 gone by now. No, 4 months, 200. I mean, we should be getting, we should be sending out millions. We've got
500,000 a month.
If we get a million a month, we'd have four. Look, we can do it. People are like, we don't have the resources. Bullshit. Yeah. We got resources to go fight Iran. Listen, we got these things called ships that can sail right up the Mississippi River, go right up there to all the ports in San Francisco and Miami, and go up to Memphis and New York and load up ships. We don't need airplanes. You know, Eric Prince had the airplane idea, which is a good idea, but I messaged to Eric immediately. We don't need airplanes. Airplanes are good for a few of them. That's good for the dust, right? What we need is ships, right? Yeah. And we can ship them. And if Venezuela doesn't want to take them back, we just clear the beach, right? You either take them back or we clear the beach and you get them back, right? And not only are you going to get them back, we're going to give back everybody. And we're going to close the Darien Gap so they can't just come right back through. That's what a man with testosterone would do. The United Nations would be closed down, period. They would already be closed, right? They would be running for the hills to avoid prosecution at this point.
Oh, they'd be a Gitmo right now. I'd roll in there with the 82nd. So one last question, because I know you have to bolt. What can the average person do right now to support this?
First of all, stop giving any support to people who are not doing mass deportations, because they are, whatever excuse they come up with, they could do it if they wanted to, right? They could do it. You can execute. Execute. We'll figure out the court work later, right? You're going on ships. You're out of here, right? We can do it. It's a clear and present danger. We've been invaded. Declare them an enemy, formation, which is what it is. These are literally, this is easy to do if you want to do it. Like, how many times has the United States gone to war and war was not declared? All those wars were impossible, right? I mean, you know, Vietnam, Iraq, Afghanistan, now we're getting ready to go to war with Iran. We're bombing Houthis. I mean, we're in clear states of war all over the place, right? Not declared, undeclared. Oh, we can't do it. Now, if you didn't want to do that, you'd say that's impossible. You know, Congress has to declare war. But, you know, in reality, the fact is, if we want to get rid of these people, it's highly doable. A lot of it could be done with information war. A lot of it could be done with paying some of them to leave. Like, here's $1,000 and a plane ticket. Or when we find you, it'll be flex cuffs in a plane, right? And we'll drop you off in some other country. We're not, We don't have some agreement with you to deliver you to your front door like a FedEx package. We'll deliver you to a beach on Venezuela and let Venezuela sort it out. Not with playing
no
food, around.
No new war. Clothes, no backpacks, no debit cards, none of that. You just go back.
You're on the beach.
You drop you off. Yeah.
There's coconut trees. Get you some coconuts. I mean, we're in a state of war. We're in a state of war. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. That's what's funny.
And until people look at this as a state of war, we will be defenseless against that because, you know, again, when I woke up this morning, I went for a walk. The very first human I met was smoking dope. The very first human I met. They will defend those bongs and they'll say, oh, no, people that smoke dope aren't violent. That's the alcohol, blah, 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 blah. They will defend those bongs. They will never defend the border, right? They'll never defend the border. It's people like me and Doc and other people and Vandersteel, many, many more. Ben Burkwatt, many, many, many have been on our border defending the border. And God bless them all. I mean, those are the real Americans. The ones who are busy defending their bong, watching idiots like Joe Rogan smoke dope in front of tens of millions of young people. You know how many times people said, I can help you get on Joe Rogan's show? And I'm like, nope. You know, I was live with Alex Jones and Alex is like, I can help you get on Joe. I've known him for 26. I'm like, nope, I'm not getting on dope smoker Joe Rogan's show. And then of course the dope heads are like, well, don't you understand, man? You can get on and reach millions of people. Yeah, I get it. Guess what? I get it. I'm not on dope. I get it. But when you allow this to happen and you act like it's not happening, you are part of it happening, right? You are inaction is action. Going on and saying, well, I know you smoke dope in front of tens of millions of young people, but let's talk about this other thing. No, how about serious people stop going on a show? Serious people would stop going on a show. They don't want to go on a show. Serious people would just stop, right? Trump goes on, but then Trump tried to push Article 3 over in Amendment 3 over in Florida, which would put cannabis stores all over Florida, right? Mm-hmm. Again, the bong monkeys will be like, you know, because they're on dope. Their brains are gone. You know, they'll tell you that they see things that you don't see and they learn a lot from being on dope. Yeah, I know. You see things I don't see. I totally get it. You see a lot of things I don't see. Like, for instance, you see the bottom of your bong, but you don't see our border, right? You don't see that the information war, whether it's alcohol or fentanyl, all these different things, intoxicants always have been the grease and fuel of psychological operations. Always. If you want to destroy a country, you don't bomb them with bombs. You bomb them with drugs. And then you bomb them with bombs. Then you bomb them with other things. You set the conditions. As you know, you're a military man. It's all about setting conditions, right? Set conditions. It can take years, decades. It can take generations to set conditions. You know, if you're going to plant teak trees to harvest teak, you're not going to teak. You're not going to get that teak next year. You know, you're going to put millions of dollars in to sow that teak, that teak. And then, you know, you're going to get it out. You know, maybe your children will get it out. Right. So you're planting trees that your children will sit in the shade of. Right. So bottom line is Americans have to American up. This idea that we voted for this guy and now everything's going to be okay. That's like a child thinking. That's daddy will fix it. Remember when Trump got elected, they were literally like daddy's home. They were people actually putting memes up. Daddy's home. I voted for Trump. I've done what I can do. You know what I mean? No, you're a
punk. Well, we talked about this before the election, right? If you look back at early November, and this is the last point before I know you got to go. Everybody was gearing up for civil war because they figured they're going to steal the election. And then all of a sudden Trump's back. Everybody went right back to sleep. And now they're blissfully unaware, blissfully not paying attention. But those of us that are awake are looking at the situation going, wait a minute, the threat is still there. The situation has not changed. The only thing different is the spigot's been turned off and we still have a significant threat. And the challenge is now, how do you get people that are still awake to start helping get other people awake that we still have a threat there that we have to deal with? And
we're doing it right now. The most dangerous thing we can do, more dangerous than going in the Darien Gap or even being on the in some of the wars, is actually talking into these microphones. I mean, this is absolutely dangerous, right? Because clearly, as these evil forces come together, there's a spiritual war unfolding, right? And as they accrue their strength, they'll kill us straight up. They'll round us up and kill us. Because that's the way these things go. You know, I read a lot. I read, I go places, I go to many countries, I go to wars and all that stuff and run around in the jungles with the Indians. I love it. But I also spend a huge amount of time with my nose in books, a lot of time. And I read history voraciously, and I have for many years. And and everything that we're seeing now, there is nothing new under the sun. So what I'm doing right now is planting mustard seeds. And I'm not meeting a lot of people halfway, like, we have to negotiate whether or not these drugs are okay and those are not. They have medical. No. That's not what this is about. This is about dumbing you down, weakening our men down. And again, the first young man that I met, or the first human I saw today, was a young man, and he was smoking dope. I'm like, well, there's a useless guy against an invasion. There's a guy that, and remember, cowards are natural traitors. Cowards and traitors, actually, if you read history book, if you read, say, Alfred Mann, you know, from 1890, his book on, you know, the effects of history of sea power on history from 1890. He talks about this. You know, cowards and traitors can be hard to tell apart. It's kind of the same thing. Actually, sometimes it's the same thing. And but cowards will ultimately always be traitors. And, you know, when somebody's on drugs, they're not going to have the resilience. They're not going to have the testosterone. Not when they're still young, they can fight because they're young, but they're not going to have the fight in them that these Chinese have that aren't on drugs. They're not going to have the fight in them that the jihadists are having when they're screaming Allahu Akbar and they're running around with a knife or a shotgun, right? They're not going to have that level of fight in them. You got to have, like, no kidding, no bullshit. I'm not watching Joe Rogan and all those idiots. Man up. It's time. I mean, that's what a basic part of this is. We have to take responsibility for our own selves and our own communities and our own country. Daddy is not going to do it because daddy is part of them. Trump is a condom. Biden was a condom. Obama was a condom. They're all a pack of Trojans, right? You know, and that's
I'm going to shamelessly steal that. That is fantastic because it's true.
They That's are.
The They're best the analogy best. I've heard all day. Absolutely yeah. The best. That's fantastic. So, okay. I know we're at time. Michael, I really appreciate you taking the time and doing this as my first guest. I really can't tell you how much I appreciate it.
It's an honor.
Man, you take care, and we'll do this again soon.
Call it the condom episode.
I absolutely will. All right, brother. Take care.
Bye. See y'all.
Well, you heard it from the man. The threat's still there. The situation really hasn't changed. What's changed is the flow, and the flow has been ongoing for, you know, several years now. And, you know, the question now is, how do you apply this to you? How do you apply this to your family? And one of the goals of this show is to give you real-world threat information, and then actionable information to go along with that. And as part of that, you have to understand what the real threat is, what's really going on in the world. That, you know, Michael Yon and Pete Chambers have done more, you know, Ben Berkwind, and there's a host of people that have been down to the Gap, and Vandersteel's another one. He mentioned a few of them. These are people who understand the threat. So here's how I see the threat right now. Number one, we still have the threat of violence from the cartels. We still have millions of military-age males that have been brought into this country by NGOs. And Michael's right. NGOs are a threat. They're not only a strategic threat, but they're a national security threat, as well as the UN. And you're not going to see defunding of the UN. Have you heard one thing from DOGE about UN money being funneled through USAID? No, you haven't. Because I would rather imagine that there's billions and billions of dollars that have been pilfered through USAID to the UN, which, let's just face it, has gone into a black hole, which is these NGOs. And you can also make the case that these NGOs are a money funneling and a money laundering operation for the UN, the Catholic Church, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a multitude of threats. But here's what you and your family can do to mitigate the threat. Number one, be physically and mentally in shape. Number two, have a plan for how you're going to, you know, round up your family when your kids are at school, you're at work, your wife's at work. How are you going to get to your family? How are you going to secure your family and how are you going to stay out of the conflict zone? And then the most important thing is be spiritually healthy, right? You heard him talk about the drug problem, the spiritual problem. He's not wrong. And most of the cowards that you see, most of the liberals that you see, and I'm not branding liberals in total, but the hardcore left, they'll be the brown shirts when things come around. Just look at what happened with the military during the COVID vaccine mandates. Every one of those officers said, I was just following orders. That was an unlawful general order that they should have gone the Brad Miller route of and saying, I'm not going to abide by this order. This is an unlawful general order. And he gave up his career for it, but that's the right thing to do. And he was able to do that and have the fortitude to do it because he was spiritually, physically, and emotionally healthy. That's where everything starts, is your personal health, your personal accountability, your personal responsibility, but most importantly, your personal discipline. And I can tell you that we're not going to get any relief from the administration. Administration is, it, for lack of a better word, is a clown show. And he was right. Look at all the appointments. They keep appointing clowns. So we, as a population, we need to spend our time being prepared and getting prepared for the fight that ultimately is coming. What it looks like, how it develops, doesn't really matter. Just be ready for the fight, right? And that starts with your person, your health, and your family. Start there. The next piece is we have two very, very long borders with countries that are hostile to us. So that means that at any time, the flow across the border and internally can be an invasion. It could be a kinetic fight. It could be lawfare fight. You never know. This could develop in a lot of different ways is what I'm saying. So being ready and having your family ready from a physical perspective, a mental perspective, emotional perspective, but more importantly, having a plan. And what does a plan look like? A plan looks like if I'm at work, I'm X minutes from my kids. Which one of us is closest to the kids? Your job in a contingency, whoever's closest to the kids, is to secure the kids. And then I will follow up and we'll have some kind of alternative comms, some kind of whatever. It's radio comms, whatever, because you can't rely on the cell phone network. But a plan to get to your kids and rally your family. Then a plan to get to a safe area. That's what that means. How far is it? How many minutes does it take? Have you driven it? What routes do you think are going to be more available versus a freeway or some kind of a state route, which would probably be clogged with vehicles if there's some kind of a major contingency? Having a plan for how you're going to do that, exercising that plan, walking the terrain, walking the distances, driving the distances, knowing exactly where to go. And just something as simple as having a safe area for your kids to go to until you can cover down on them. That's not a school. That could be life-changing. So the point is, build a plan for getting your family. Build a plan for exfiltrating from the area. Build a plan to getting to a safe area. Build a plan for when you're at home, when you're at work, when you're on vacation. All of those things matter. Most people don't think about it, right? They think, well, we have a plan for when we're at work, or we have a plan for when we're at home. But they don't plan for, what if I'm on vacation? What if I'm traveling for business? Then what's the plan? Where is the rally point for the family if I have to travel 1,000 or 2,000 miles? Because it could take months. So you have to have a plan for that. And planning, to me, is probably the most important part of this. So first step is get healthy, be healthy, stay healthy. Second part is build a plan for you and your family. I'll be back next week. Thanks everyone for the patience in letting me build this show and get this off the ground. You'll see more shows building over time. As I said, there's going to be several shows that come out of this on this channel. This will be the primary show. We'll have a show dedicated to just the threat. Here's the threat as we see it. And we'll have, I'll try to have guests every single week. Until next week, God bless everyone. One team, one fight.